This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a affront, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome to Spotlight. Tensions are rising between the U.S. and its European allies over the Ukraine war. Negotiations on how to end the war were held in Saudi Arabia between Moscow and Washington without the participation of Kiev. No seat at the table for Europe either. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, reacting to the talks, said the U.S. president was living in a disinformation space and that he won't accept any agreement that Ukraine was not a part of. Donald Trump responded by calling Zelensky a dictator who refuses to have elections. The U.S. president's remarks were condemned by Kiev and its European allies, with German Chancellor Olaf Scholz calling the comments wrong and dangerous. Other EU leaders have also criticized Trump, reaffirming their support for Zelensky and Ukraine. Joining us on tonight's Spotlight, we have political economy analyst and researcher Mr. Clive Menzies, joining us from the British capital, London. And we also have journalist, activist, and political analyst John Bosnich, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. General, welcome to the program. Let's start off with Mr. Menzies in London. As this rift between Washington and Europe widens over the war in Ukraine, the EU says that it wants to send a very strong message of support to Kiev with a new aid package. Please share with us your views regarding the recent developments, and were you expecting such a rapid breakdown in relations on the support front for Ukraine?
Well, it's difficult to know exactly what's going on, but the first thing to know is that all of these people, Trump, Zelensky, the EU leaders, are acting under orders. And one of the main problems, and this is not just in respect to Ukraine, but is a general problem, is that people are awakening to the various lies that they've been told, and this is becoming global. So that the structure, if you like, or those that are actually pulling the strings, are trying to get ahead of the curve. And Trump is quite useful in that respect because he comes across as being able to satisfy some of the people's concern, draining the swamp, ending the war in Russia. But the reality is that we're in almost in a fairy tale world where little of what is said is actually important. It's what is done that is important. And we mustn't forget that whilst this particular piece of geopolitical theatre is going on, that the problems in Palestine and the genocide goes on. So it's a lot to do with keeping people in a state of uncertainty, but also promoting the idea of fear. Now, the one thing that Trump appears to be doing is actually taking positive steps to end this war. But it's quite perverse that in 2022, immediately after the onset of the special military operation, the US pressured the EU into imposing sanctions and effectively shooting themselves in the foot economically and almost in every other respect. So what we have here is a reversal where the puppets in Europe have, in the main, embraced this economic and strategic suicide, hook, line and sinker. But now that Trump has been elected and the old Democrat regime has been washed away and there's a new position, the EU is left rather out on a limb and pretty irrelevant. So is there any reason for them to be at the negotiating table? Because at the end of the day, the fact that NATO was America and everyone in Europe was basically following the lead, what is NATO if America is not participating in what's going on? So at the end of the day, I think the EU is just going to have to suck it and see, because certainly they have no part to play in this negotiation because they want the war to continue.
Right. Let's bring in Mr. Bosnich. A lot of points brought up there by our guest in London. Would you like to add anything to that?
Well, I would start by saying I agree with every word he said. The situation is chaotic, and it seems like the EU is like a puppet who's lost its puppeteer. The EU was run remotely by the United States through its NATO armed forces regime. And now that the President of the United States is opposed to pumping U.S. money and weapons into Europe to defend Europe from a war that Europe promoted under the Biden administration's guidance, now they don't know what to do. And these are puppets who are not used to thinking for themselves. It should be noted here that England left the EU on purpose, and that was an act supported by Trump. Trump is very good friends with Nigel Farage, who led the referendum to pull out of the EU. So Trump has been demolishing the EU because the EU has been a major sinkhole for American weapons, American money, and American intelligence. And this is a waste of American resources when the American economy is foundering and the country has run up a debt that will destroy America if it's not brought under control. Now, as for what's been going on in Ukraine, Trump is giving the dictate to the dictator. Because the dictator is Zelensky. Zelensky has not been holding elections. Zelensky took power after a Hollywood scripted fake story. He was a TV star in a TV series in which a common man who's just a school teacher becomes a president. Well, in fact, that TV series itself was scripted from Hollywood as a black op or a psy-op of the U.S. deep state. They scripted that series. They sold it through the oligarch named Kolomoisky, who owns the television network that aired the series, and he owned the contract of Zelensky, who was nothing more than a cross-dressing actor. So the actor-comedian was made the president. The president pursued the war because he was taking his cut. to the tune of billions of dollars, and now Trump has pulled the plug on the entire garbage of a show that was set up in Ukraine. And the victims of this, of course, are the hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian men who were sent to their deaths, the hundreds of thousands of Russians who fought against them, and the people of Ukraine who were tricked, robbed, and had their country destroyed.
Back to Mr. Menzies in London. I want to get your thoughts on the response, the Ukrainian response we've seen with regards to the talks that took place in Saudi Arabia. Zelensky said that he would not recognize any deal made without Kiev's involvement. Even the Ukrainian soldiers have said that they'll fight till the end, rejecting any peace decision without involvement of their country in negotiations.
Well, I think it's important to understand that this war started in 2014 with an investment of $5 billion for regime change. And that program, if you like, continued under Trump as it had started under Obama. So we're in this situation where this money has been invested in regime change in an attempt to get beyond the curve, in the same way that, you know, former useful allies are jettisoned if it's convenient, then clearly Zelensky has become a toxic brand, for want of a better way of putting it, precisely for the reasons that your other guest has pointed out. And so we're in a position where what Zelensky says is probably largely irrelevant. And I also, I think you've listened to Alexander Mercuris. He talks about a recent trip that Zelensky made, I think, to UAE. And part of that process was to set up companies to launder the money that he's in danger of losing should he be deposed. So I think he's already prepared his parachute. I would add one last thing, which I think is quite important for people to think about and know, is in spite of Brexit, the UK never left the European Union in so many respects, militarily, legally, financially, in the regulatory sense. So like Trump's election in 2016, what Brexit did was divide the 99%, because the ongoing message from a large proportion of the population who were protesting all that was going on, austerity, wars, etc., was we are the 99%. And what Brexit without the exit and Trump's election did, we split that 99% right down the middle and create division and distraction whilst they continue to get on with their regime change operation in Ukraine, whilst Israel continued its mischief in Palestine. So we have to be very wary of the theatrics that are placed in front of us in order to get us excited and to draw our energy and get us off the focus of what really counts here, which is a structure of systemic abuse and destruction.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
John Bosnich, the top brass of the EU didn't elaborate much on the amount of the support package, but they outlined that it would include military assistance. So there's two questions here. One, do you think that Donald Trump will try to reel in the spending for Ukraine? And if that's the case, Can Europe go at it alone from here?
Well, first of all, Donald Trump is definitely cutting Zelensky loose. Zelensky made a grievous error by attacking Donald Trump personally when this started, and that means Zelensky's brand is closed. Zelensky is, I could even go so far as to say I think he's a dead man walking, and there is nowhere on earth that he can go with the billions that he has stolen. But as for what will happen now in the EU, I do agree with your other speaker that the Brexit vote, although it passed, did not completely or even majorly remove the links between the continent and the British Isles. However, Brexit and the referendum to leave was step one. Step number two is to break NATO, and that is what's taking place now. The breaking of NATO is happening over Poland and, most importantly, Hungary, talking about not participating in this. And if you look at the map, if you don't have Poland and you don't have Hungary as your key players in this already lost effort to save Ukraine, then you don't have any EU, any NATO effort in Ukraine. And so Trump is going to set them loose. They can do what they want. They have zero, and I mean zero, chance of defeating Russia. Russia knows that this is an existential issue. It must therefore win, and it will therefore win, and it will use whatever weapons are necessary to win without any restriction. So this battle is over. Ukraine has been lost. It's a question now whether Russia will allow a rump Ukraine to exist around Kiev or not. And it's a question of how the spoils will be divided up. There's a good chance that Russia will give parts of Ukraine back to Poland and back to Hungary to knock them out of NATO. And if NATO falls, then we have an entire new global geostrategic situation.
Mr. Menzies, there are some divisions in Europe as well. Poland has hinted at Ukraine should cooperate with the U.S. The French President Emmanuel Macron, for his part, said he'll tell Trump, you can't be weak in the face of Putin. How should this chasm in Europe be looked at?
I think it comes down to the fact that we are very different culturally. We have very different histories. I think mainland Europe in particular, because it, unlike the UK, the borders are constantly moving, or have been constantly moving over the centuries, and nations have, and empires have risen and fallen. I'm putting this from a perspective of people who are aware of what's going on. Macron is a Rothschild protege, so he's acting on behalf of the structure, and the von der Leyens of this world and others are similarly motivated and manipulated. But at the end of the day, politicians, in spite of being actors, have to, in many respects, try and curry favour with their electorate in order to become real, in order to be re-elected. And I would argue that some politicians do actually have their own mind and will attempt to act in accordance with what they believe in. So I think the fragmented of Europe is not surprising. I mean, what we're looking at, and the EU was a stepping stone to this, is a one world government. And where we're at the moment is that the structure, for want of a better way of putting it, the one world government idea, is desperately trying to get all the pieces in place whilst the whole edifice is shaking and falling apart. And the reality is that people's awareness is rising. They are beginning to turn their backs on, certainly in the UK, their government, councils, any form of authority. You know, the whole attack on our food supply is very visible to Brits these days. And there's a growing, if you like, non-compliance and non-cooperation with the system. And, you know, in spite of the fact that wars are always fought by the poor on behalf of the rich, they do need the population to actually support these things. That's why they spent so much time trying to foster the First and Second World Wars and every other war you can think of, spreading democracy in Vietnam. So basically, governments are losing the support of their populace. and they are becoming increasingly irrelevant. And this year is going to be pivotal because new structures will arise which will actually eradicate all this. And as far as the spending is concerned, most of the spending that is announced going to Ukraine and many other places is not going to the intended purpose. It's going into the pockets of all those who facilitate and are in the chain, if you like, of communication.
Sure. Mr. Bozich, I saw you smiling there. Would you like to add anything to Clive's comments? And in addition to that, if you may, I want you to share your thoughts with us on Donald Trump's recent comments regarding Ukraine, that Kiev started it, and on a couple of occasions calling Zelensky a dictator. That's a total 180 from the Biden stance.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I noticed that your other commentator today, like I do, holds the view that this war started in 2014 and not the propaganda Western line stream media view that it started just 2 years ago. This war was started by the West. They paid for it to happen. They recruited neo-Nazis. They recruited active Nazi party members. They put weapons over there, and they thought, well, what do we have to lose? This is the Biden regime. What do we have to lose? We're taking our percentage. We're taking our cut. We're taking millions, if not billions, of dollars directly. We're selling weapons. We're making the industry of the arms industry work. And we have nothing to lose. And if the Ukrainians lose, well, what's the difference? A few more dead Slavs. Because for the position of a person like Biden, a dead Slav, whether it's a dead Ukrainian or a dead Russian, is the same thing, because they spent the entire Cold War planning to fight Slavs, including Ukrainians. So this is the end of the game. Zelensky is definitely a dictator, and he is a dictator who is about to fall. And when dictators fall, they don't usually fall softly.
Mr. Menzies, about this total 180 from the Biden stance, I think a question that is on the mind of a lot of people and a lot of observers of the situation is, why has Donald Trump all of a sudden stacked the deck against Ukraine?
Well, I think there are two answers to that. There is a structural answer that I alluded to earlier, where the structure is trying to get ahead of the curve. But we mustn't forget the history of Trump and Russia. Trump is a greedy businessman, and he was happy to do business with Russia and was vilified, and they attempted to do all sorts of things to remove him as a power because of his links with Russia. So he sees Russia as a good business partner. And I suppose from a political standpoint, that is where this comes from. In elections, it's just marketing, campaigning, and what happens afterwards is often open to debate. But one of the things that Trump was elected on was to stop this war. And that appears to be what he's doing. Now, whether he'll follow through to the bitter end, who knows? But it's certainly, all his actions look thus far to be ending this war. But meanwhile, as I said earlier, we mustn't forget the fact that the ongoing carte blanche for Israel doesn't seem to be affected in any way. And one may argue that the situation over Gaza is now worse as a result of Trump's election. So, you know, there are pluses and minuses in this.
Sure. John Bozich, just a few minutes ago, you mentioned the issue of the spoils of war. At the Munich Security Conference, the White House National Security Advisor Mike Waltz said Ukraine needs to strike a deal on U.S. access to Ukraine's critical minerals. On that notion of the spoils of war, please outline that for us.
Well, there are literally hundreds of billions of dollars in strategic minerals in Ukraine. But the problem for the American side is that most of those minerals are concentrated in the mining district in Donbass, and that is under the control of Russian forces now. So Ukraine can sign off on whatever they want to do, but they cannot deliver the goods. Donald Trump is you know, playing that to try and justify whatever continued links there might be with Ukraine, because I think that the United States does not want to lose its footing completely in Ukraine, but we have to accept the fact that Russia is not donating those resources to America, and China is backing Russia up on that stance. And finally, one thing about killing dragons, you kill them one at a time. You don't kill them in groups. So Donald Trump first has to kill the deep state dragon in Ukraine, and then he has to kill the deep state dragon in Gaza. And if he does that, then he's a dragon killer and he'll go down in history as a hero. If he doesn't do that, if he turns out to just be only what his critics call him, a bribed agent of the Israel lobby, then he will go down in history among the many, many American and other leaders who sold their souls to the Israel lobby. He can choose his own destiny.
Okay, Mr. Menzies, we're short of time. Just one last question for you. I want to close this program out with the recent comments from Elon Musk, who's been a senior advisor to Trump. He accused Zelensky of running a wartime fraud machine, feeding off dead soldiers, and that Kiev had no war achievements but a huge death toll. Walk us through those comments, please.
Well, this is a subject of another program. I'm sure you could fit it. But there are so many strands to Absolutely. The production that's gone on in Ukraine, whether you're talking about in the pharmaceutical field, weaponization of viruses, organ trafficking, child trafficking, let alone the straight corruption of billions. Nobody knows. I mean, the amount of money that Europe and America have poured into Ukraine has been astronomical. I'm guessing something like half a trillion off the top of my head. And very little of that has gone into the stated purpose of making standing with Ukraine. It was more like standing with the criminal autocracy that has taken over the country, with the full blessing of actors and players in the corporate sphere globally, and particularly in America and the UK. You know, nobody's hands are clean in this.
All right, we're going to have to leave it there. Thanks to my guest, Mr. Clive Menzies, political economy analyst and researcher, joining us from London. And thanks to John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. It's good night for now, and see you next time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. This is the Heart of Life Pounding. IRIB English Radio.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitan rajim. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammadin wa ali baytihi al-tayyibin al-tahirin. Brothers, sisters, listeners, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. I am your host, Abdullah Al-Musawi. One of the groups of our society that requires our attention and our help and support is the elderly. The elderly, they have special requirements. And the elderly, mind you, is us in about 10, 15, 20 years. That's life. We are young, youth, middle age, and then we become elderly. In the same way, we want to be taken care of once we get old. We should take care of the old now, that hopefully people will take care of us once we get old. It's just a cycle of life, I guess. Now, in the Islamic theology, in the Islamic teachings, taking care of the elderly has taken a big space, that we need to do whatever we can in trying to protect them and protect their rights and come to their help. Even Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, He says this job is not only specified for men, but is also required from the ladies as well, which Allah gives us a classical example in chapter Al-Qasas in verse 23, where He talks about the daughters of Prophet Shu'aib when they had this discussion with Musa alayhi salam. وَوَجَدَ مِن دُونِهِمَا إِمْرَأَتَيْنِ. The Musa found two girls amongst the group. تَذُودَانَ. They're trying to get to the water, but obviously the men not letting them. قَالَ مَا خَطْبُكُمَا. He said, what's the matter with you? قَالَتَ لَا نَسْقِي. We can't get to the water to give it to our sheep. حَتَّى يَصْدُرُ الرُّعَى. Until the rest of the farmers, the shepherds, go, then we can go. So obviously it was a male-dominated area. وَأَبُونَا شَيْخٌ كَبِيرٌ. And that's the moral of the story. And our father is an old man. Because he's an old man, he can't come and give water to the sheep himself because he's weak. So the daughters of Shu'aib, they took it upon themselves to help their father because he's in an old age gap. Then Musa alayhi salam, obviously we know the story, he stepped up and he took care of the ladies and he ended up marrying one of them as well. Also, we see that the brothers of Yusuf alayhi salam, when they came to Yusuf himself after he was in charge of the treasury of Egypt, they said to him, قَالُوا يَا أَيُّهَا الْعَزِيزِ. They said, oh, honored one, إِنَّ لَهُ أَبًا شَيْخًا كَبِيرًا. When Yusuf decided to take his brother, Benjamin, they said to him, look, he has an old father. فَخُدْ أَحَدَنَا مَكَانَا. Take one of us instead. Why? Because he's an old man. And if he hears and learns about his son being taken, it might cause him a lot of grief, considering that he already lost Yusuf. Obviously, them not knowing that they are talking to Yusuf himself. So the idea here is, even in the Quran, he mentions a shaykhukha, which is being in an old stage of life, elderly life. Therefore, these people need to be taken care of. They have a specific status. They require a specific sort of respect. There are things we cannot do to them. Even during war, they're not meant to be killed or taken prisoners, and so on and so forth. Some of the stuff that, inshallah, we will look at right after the break, so stay with us.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are still listening to the program, Mafatihul Hayat, Keys of Life. So we were discussing the elderly. The first thing we need to do is understand their position and their status. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, in a hadith, he said, "Ash-shaykhu fi ahlihi kan-nabiyyu fi ummatih." An old man in his family, like a prophet in his nation. Why is a comparison between the old man and the prophet in the house and in the nation? Because of the experience. A prophet who is sent by Allah has all the knowledge it requires to save the nation. While an old man in the house, he lived life. He's been through the ups and downs, the good and the bad. So he can advise the family to do the right thing because he has been through it. So the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi, he draws that comparison between an old man who has learned and gained knowledge compared to the Prophet. A hadith from Imam Zayn al-Abidin alayhi salam, when he talks about the rights of brothers in faith, and he says, وَأَنْ يَكُونَ شُيُوخُهُمْ بِمَنْزِلَةِ أَبِيكِ, that when you treat people, your brothers in faith, especially when it comes to the elderly, he said that their oldest or the elderliest, it needs to be in the status of your father. So when you see an old man, you need to treat him as your father. وَشُبَّانُهُمْ بِمَنْزِلَةِ أَخِيكِ, and their youth in the same status as your brothers. وَعَجَائِزُهِمْ, their old women, بِمَنْزِلَةِ أُمِّكْ, and their old woman has to be in the same status as your mother. So when we see an old man or an old lady, they need to be treated like they are our parents. So this is the emphasis on respecting the status of the elderly. Also, in terms of respecting them, we have a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salam, where he's giving advice to his son, Imam al-Hasan, salamullahi alayhi. He says to him, وَرْحَمْ مِنْ أَهْلِكَ الصَّغِيرِ, and have mercy in your family on the young. وَوَقِّرْ مِنْهُمَ الْكَبِيرِ, and respect the elderly from your family. Now, obviously, this advice not to Imam al-Hasan alayhi salam, but to all of us. So we need to show some respect towards the elderly. And I think this is more of a global thing, where wherever you go around the world, elderly are respected, generally speaking. But obviously Islam emphasizes on that. It puts teachings towards that. The Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wasallam said, "Min ijlali Allahi ijlali di shayba." A way of respecting Allah and honoring Allah is to honor those who are old and they have white beard. And he specifies Al-Muslim, those who are Muslim. Also, he said, مَنْ عَرَفَ فَضْلَ كَبِيرِ السِّنِ فَوَقَّرَهُ آمَنَهُ اللَّهُ مِنْ فَزَأَ يَوْمُ الْقِيَامَةِ. Those who understand the status of an old man, and thus they respect them, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala on the Day of Judgment will not make them terrified of the terrifying events that will take place. Inshallah, we will continue our discussions in episodes to come. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams. Hear the children scream.
That was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
We are with you. How about you? Irabi English Radio. Please log on to our website at iranradio.ir.
In the limelight.
On his first day, the US President Donald Trump paused billions of dollars in funding for clean energy projects initiated by the Biden administration's Green New Deal. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered the story and tells us more. Mike Mullett strains to see through sheets of misty rain while driving through working-class neighbourhoods of Columbus, a quaint town in southern Indiana. He's trying to find the senior centre, multi-family homes and rent-assisted properties, more than 530 in total, that he and many other locals hope will receive $4.42 million in federal funding for solar electricity projects, but now that money is at risk. On 20th of January, Donald Trump paused billions of dollars of federal grant funding for clean energy and other projects around the country initiated by the Biden administration's Green New Deal. Mike Mullett says, "We've been slavishly working on a plan since April of 2023 that would provide solar energy to hundreds of households in two low- and moderate-income Columbus neighborhoods. The project was expected to be rolled out in April, with previously approved funding thought to have been made available by 14th of February. He said, unless the Trump administration makes a 180-degree turn on funding, that expectation will obviously not be met. The funding is part of the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency's $7 billion Solar for All program, which is meant to help low-income families save money on electricity costs. About $117 million was set for solar projects and initiatives in Indiana. Communities across Indiana, a solidly Republican Midwestern state, were set to benefit more than most from the Biden administration's ambitious clean energy push in what was an ultimately failed effort to win votes in Rust Belt states whose voters have abandoned Democratic Party politicians in recent decades. By August of 2024, $7.8 billion in private investment for a host of clean energy projects, including solar and battery production, had come to Indiana, spurred in part by promise of federal grants and local tax abatement schemes. But Donald Trump has followed through on his election campaign promise to roll back clean energy initiatives, referring to Joe Biden's efforts as the Green New Scam. Leading Republicans have backed his move despite the potential economic risk to states where the president is popular. The Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson said on 5th of February, "The executive branch of government in our system has the right to evaluate how executive branch agencies are operating." We continue with The Guardian's coverage of this story. On 10th of February, a federal judge issued an order for the Trump administration to unfreeze its funding hold. Indiana isn't alone in its drive for solar energy. Solar projects ranging from utility scale to single housing efforts have proved hugely popular in red states. Texas has the second highest number of installed solar power units after California, enough to power more than 4.5 million homes. Florida follows close behind. $250 billion, 80% of the total funding for green energy manufacturing and other initiatives was to go to projects in Republican-leaning congressional districts across the United States. According to one industry organization, at 3.4% of its total, Indiana, where Donald Trump won by almost 19 percentage points in November's presidential election, produces more state electricity from solar energy than Democrat-leaning states such as Illinois, Washington, and New Hampshire. Zach Schultz, the Indiana program director at Solar United Neighbors Action, a non-profit organization that has helped invest $7.1 million in solar initiatives in the state, says the $130 million in total solar for all funding awarded for Indiana would transform Indiana's solar market by allowing more than 10,000 families in low-income communities around the state to directly benefit from the electric bill savings and resilience afforded by local solar energy. Zach Schultz added, "It's really a nonpartisan issue if you look at the survey polling across the United States. We've had elected officials of both parties in Indiana signing letters of support. We know that this is a popular program." But some questioned the importance of federal dollars in fueling solar energy's growth at the utility scale, and more broadly, its ability to meet the enormous demand for electricity. Indiana Republican Representative Ed Soliday, who has backed laws supporting solar initiatives in the state, says, "I've had a number of solar utility companies in, and in many instances, they're saying that the tax rebates and other federal funding are nice, but the industry has matured quite a bit to the extent that they still have enough profit margin without it." He added, "What's shaking out is that commercial solar energy is advancing far more than the rooftop equivalent. You can't run a manufacturing plant on rooftop solar panels." Emails sent to the Indiana Republican Party and a state senator representing Columbus asking if party members believe the funding pause could risk solar electricity projects and disrupt business developments were not responded to. In Columbus, Indiana, Donald Trump's move has been demoralizing for Mike Mullett and others who have made a huge effort to secure funding that would see solar electricity infrastructure installed at 320 community households, 204 multifamily households, and 7 single-family project households. The website Energy Central has also covered the same story and tells us more. For several years, Republicans accused Joe Biden of waging a war on energy, even as the United States drilled more oil and gas than at any time in history. Now, a more tangible assault is gathering pace under Donald Trump, aimed squarely at wind, solar, and other cleaner forms of energy. In the first 2 weeks of his return as president, Donald Trump has, like his first term in office, issued orders to open up more American land and waters for fossil fuel extraction and starting the process to yank the U.S. from the Paris Climate Agreement. Trump, who has promised to cut energy and electricity prices in half within the next 18 months, said, "We will drill, baby, drill." But Trump has this time also launched a blitzkrieg against renewable energy, with his Department of Interior temporarily suspending all clean energy development, but tellingly not oil and gas, on federal land. Meanwhile, an energy emergency declared by Donald Trump mentions the need to bolster crude oil, natural gas, lease condensates, natural gas liquids, refined petroleum products, uranium and coal, but not solar energy, wind energy or other clean energy technologies. Donald Trump has said he would like to see good clean coal, the dirtiest of fossil fuels, meet the rising electricity demand from artificial intelligence generation. Trump has long disparaged wind energy, calling it disgusting and baselessly alleging turbines are the primary cause of whale and bird deaths, and his administration has now halted all federal approvals of onshore and offshore wind energy. He then expanded his attack to solar energy, the fastest growing energy source in the United States. Trump said, "You know what people also don't like? Those massive solar fields built over land that cover 10 miles by 10 miles. I mean, they're ridiculous, the whole thing. Smaller scale solar projects are also being suspended, with the new administration freezing $7 billion in funding already awarded for community and rooftop solar energy in low-income families and communities."